Meow. 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 Freedom Fiends, this is Mr. Derek J, broadcasting from Pod Bay 2 Gay, professional prisoner studios. We blast only the highest quality happiness waves out into the atmosphere. This surrounds the globe with good vibrations and forces bad hamsters to surrender. Michael Dean can't be with us tonight. He's probably cleaning his guns and eating a bowl of sugar. With me tonight, Zombie Davi Barker from SurvivorMax.com. Hey, Davi.
How's it going?
It's superb. And MK Lords with the name of a superhero from BitcoinNotBombs.com. How's it going, MK?
Howdy.
Yeah.
Feeling fabulous.
Yeah, and we are here to interrupt your regularly scheduled programming to talk about guns, ganja, and maybe some gays. Also, yeah. Bitcoin is in the news. And but guys, first, I wanted to start off. I was recently, I believe, the victim of government overreach. I believe they are infringing on my right to bear arms, which I view as an inherent right. And I wanted to really get to this by, let's start off asking, what do you feel about the Second Amendment? Davi?
Well, I couldn't really recite it off the top of my head. I do think that people should have the right to possess objects and tools for various reasons. And to me, a firearm, a weapon, or really any means of self-defense is just a tool. And so the fact that they wrote it down is nice, but even if they hadn't, you know, it's what separates us from the animal kingdom. So it seems like it should be a very basic and inalienable human right.
Second Amendment, MK Lords.
Yeah, it is a human right, and whether it's codified or not on a piece of paper, it doesn't really change that. So people have the right to protect themselves with any various number of tools, and yeah, that applies to everyone, whether or not it's written down.
Yeah, I feel the same way, and Davi, you were the author of a document which sort of mimics the Bill of Rights. Called the Shire Society Declaration. Did it mention anything about arms?
No, it didn't. I didn't have anything to do with the drafting of the text. I just physically wrote it, like, with a pen. I did the calligraphy for the declaration itself. So I didn't come up with the verbiage. I just made the nice curls. But no, I don't think it says anything about weapons, but I'm pretty sure it says something about self-defense.
So here's the thing, I'm a totally peaceful guy, but I think that a person needs to have a right to have weapons, like to be able to defend themselves, and it's part of a peaceful society. People would have weapons to protect their property or to use as tools. You know, unfortunately, the world is not filled with angels, and it's just weird to me that in New Hampshire, supposedly a shall-issue state, I have to ask permission from the local police chief in order to conceal a gun. So here's the background. In New Hampshire, you can openly carry a gun, meaning, you know, wear one on your hip. But if you want to put on a winter jacket, that requires permission from the local police chief. And this is really bizarre to me. So I figure, okay, I'll just ask permission. No big deal. Fill out the form. But then I was denied.
It's not as shall as they made it sound.
No, I mean, I thought you fill out the form, you pay the $10, you get permission. Because who's going to deny a person who has a right to openly carry a gun the ability to
wear
a jacket? Yeah, exactly.
Which is arguably more useful, you know. I'm not a huge fan of open carry. I don't think it's very safe if you're going to be handling a gun.
Yeah, so I just bring this up because I never imagined when I was a liberal that gun bans would would affect me. You know, like, that affects bad guys. That's all those bad people. You know, I picture people with gangster suits or something. You know, that keeps guns away from those people. And then finally it hits home, and it has sincerely affected me. And I wonder if this could affect any other activist. Now, I've never been convicted of any sort of violent crime, but the government, in their denial, listed as part of their reason a lack of respect for the police. Hmm. And the judge said that while respect for police can't be mandated, it can sort of be, well, he says, this lack of respect does not, per se, render the defendant unsuitable. No one can mandate that respect. But the petitioner's record shows, however, that he manifests that lack of respect by repeatedly placing himself in situations where the authority of the police is challenged. Well, that's interesting wordage. Uh-huh. You know, the authority
of
the police.
So you can have the First Amendment or the Second Amendment, but not both.
Yeah, isn't that interesting? I mean, that is essentially the government's argument here. Now, there's an opportunity to appeal this to a higher court. I'm not really sure what I'm going to do with this, but it's weird to me that a person on Earth has to ask another human being this sort of permission, and then he can just deny it based on what I think is pretty much no grounds at all.
Well, and it's interesting, if you look at the history of it, what kind of changed my mind as a former liberal is looking at the history of gun control and seeing that it was used by the police and by authority figures on the disenfranchised, on minorities, you know, on black people and Indians and all of these other people to keep them from rising up and keep them from any kind of self-defense. The NRA, actually, early on was very gun control. You know, a lot of people think of them as protecting gun rights now, but they were actually for gun control in a lot of ways.
Well, they still are.
They still are. Yeah,
they're not like radical gun rights advocates. They're like, we just want to register our firearms and comply with reasonable laws.
Yes.
Would you comply with this law? I mean, who's going to know if you're concealing a firearm, right?
Right.
Well, what are the consequences if you are caught?
Because here's the thing, into like, that.
Yeah, let's hear it.
There are some different consequences, it turns out. So if it's a pistol or a handgun, a smaller gun, and it's concealed, that's a Class A misdemeanor, which means a fine of up to $1,000 and 1 year in jail. Or if it's a long gun, that's a $60 fine. So, so if it's a rifle.
A long gun.
Yeah, so you can conceal a long gun.
But how do you conceal? I don't know that you can conceal a long gun.
No. Okay, so here's another weird distinction in the law. And this is why the politicians should stay off of these gun laws, because it doesn't make any sense. And as you put earlier, Davi, it's just a piece of property. So it's just weird that they can make all these rules about how you use your own property. But no, if you conceal a long gun, that's okay. I don't need a permit for that. So I can put as many AKs as I can fit under my trench coat.
Well, I mean,
and
if
walk
you can conceal
like
a long gun, maybe, you know, you ought to like have a performing, like go on the road and perform it in as a sideshow. I mean, like, nothing up my sleeve. Nope, there's a rifle up there. I mean, I would pay to see that.
Isn't that funny? Like, why would they say that you can conceal a long gun, not a handgun? And then if you're in your car, that's a different kind of concealing. That's the one that gets you just a $60 fine. It's so weird. I mean, if the gun is in your car and it's a handgun, it's a year in jail and $1,000. If it's a long gun, it's no jail time and just $60. I mean,
so here's
who
the
makes
thing,
these rules?
You lead a very active life, and it would not surprise me if from time to time an agent of the state decided to pat you down and see what you had concealed. So that's mm-hmm. the risk you're running as Derek J, right? So I don't know. I don't know that I would, unless I was planning on being a low profile person. I don't know that I would flaunt that law.
I was going to ask about that because I feel, you know, safer carrying now. But if I had more attention kind of focus on me, I don't know that I'd be as likely to break the law. I do advocate, from a philosophical standpoint, breaking unjust laws, especially something like that in the sense of self-protection. But if you're going to have a lot of focus on you, if you're going to be a target, you know, specifically for carrying a gun, that kind of changes things. That is a very difficult
Unless,
decision.
Huge caveat here, that's the law that you want to raise awareness about. Unless that's the law you want to flaunt publicly entirely, if
yeah,
that makes sense.
Isn't that how precedent mm-hmm. is set? You know, that's when the courts decide, okay, this law was a bad law, somebody openly violated it, and we're going to stand behind them.
Now, that would be interesting, because how do you, because the sort of key function of civil disobedience is that it be not concealed, right? Like, civil disobedience has to be public and visible to function.
Yeah, so
long guns would be perfect.
Well, how do you openly conceal carry? You really can't open. You can't use civil disobedience for this one, unless you pull. So there were some gun activists in New Hampshire who made a similar point a few years ago by showing up to a university where guns are restricted, and they announced that they would be carrying firearms onto the school property. However, when they showed up, it was not apparent whether or not they were carrying guns. They were just wearing suits, and nobody could tell. And so, nobody had any right to pat them down, of course. It had to be up to the mind of the viewer.
There was a piece of marijuana legalization activism that happened, it seems like years ago, but it was a man was handcuffed to a box so that he could not separate himself from the box and could not control what was or wasn't in the box. And then another activist came along and put some marijuana in the box and left. So the person who had the marijuana and the person who initiated the possession of marijuana on the scene disappeared, unknown, gone. And the man who was caught or publicly was possessing marijuana did not choose to possess marijuana. He was there handcuffed, and it was out of his control what was put in the box. And you could do that. You could do some sort of stunt like that with a concealed carry. Like, you could walk out with a sign that said, "I did not pack my own bag," right? Or something like that. Or maybe if there were like 10 people standing on a corner and you said, "One of us is concealed carrying," right?
Yeah, I mean, the police have no right to just stop a person and frisk them unless any person has that right. I mean, if I saw that someone was throwing rocks at my window, I might want to, or if there was someone who had just committed a crime, I mean, that sort of makes sense to stop them. But to frisk them, I mean, when does a person have the right to frisk another human being? Is there any time when that's appropriate?
Maybe
when entering a club.
Yeah, maybe. The only thing I could think of is like when I was a kid, if I stole a candy bar, my parents might have turned out my pockets.
Oh, turning out your pockets to expose the candy. Well, we're gonna hear from some ear witnesses coming up.
Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean. This is what radio sounds like now.
Admit it. You hate shopping for Christmas. You do. It's a hassle coupled with a burden, mechanically checking off friends, relatives, and coworkers from your list. You're probably not even religious, but if you are, is buying your cousin some little made-in-China piece of plastic really celebrating the birth of your savior? This holiday season, why buy gifts for friends and relatives? Most of them are status anyway. You should send that money to the Freedom Fiends instead. The Freedom Fiends will use your money to help spread education of horizontal liberation throughout the world. If you want to help provide inoculation from indoctrination, go to freedomfiends.com and click on the spinning coin on any post to send your money to the fiends instead. Because buying crap for unappreciative statist relatives won't get your name on the golden floppy disk of redemption. And if you must shop for Christmas, please do it through the Freedom Fiends Amazon link over on the right side of freedomfiends.com. It won't cost you anything extra, and Amazon will save you the danger of holiday drive-by stabbings at your local mall. Amazon pretty much sells everything you can buy on this earth, except for guns and weed. But they do sell the DVD Guns and Weed: The Road to Freedom, so get that for your gun-hating stoner brother or neocon gun nut dad. They'll thank you for it. That's freedomfiends.com.
Worms.
Ow. Rear. Ow, meow.
Worms, 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 worms.
Worms. Worms. Rear.
Freedom Fiends. In this segment. segment, we have to talk about the NYPD officers who were killed in an ambush. It's so sad. I'm not happy about this story. It's so tragic when people are just ambush killed seemingly for no reason. And what makes this story extra interesting is that the alleged killer, who it's pretty sure the suspect is pretty sure confirmed because he committed suicide after, bragged about his crime.
And he uploaded the
photos. Yeah, on Instagram. What is that about? Davi, do you have an Instagram?
I don't have an Instagram. But it's not the first time I've heard of a shooter being caught by sort of sharing photos of themselves. So it doesn't surprise me that much, if that makes sense.
What would what would make a person want to do that? Bragging about it?
Like, share a lot. Do you think he wants on social media?
Is it about glory? I mean, did he think he was going to be rewarded somehow? Like, I don't know. People were going to be throwing him a parade? I mean, this is a horrible thing to do. Why brag about it?
Well, I don't know. People tend to overshare a lot on social media. I mean, there are a lot of things that people put out there that's kind of like, that's a little private. You may not want to put that up. But I think a lot of it may have been for attention. I mean, I think when people do these crimes, they're looking for attention. They're looking for that negative media coverage. And they're hoping that maybe, you know, he seems like he had a pretty violent, long history of crimes, according to, you know, the police. And, you know, maybe it was something they thought would spur copycat.
So what do you know about this guy? You said he has a history of violence?
Well, yeah, according to this New York Times article, his name is Brinsley. He had a long rap sheet of crimes that included robbery and carrying a concealed gun. And it's believed that he shot his former girlfriend near Baltimore.
Wait, one of his crimes was carrying a concealed gun?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Now, yeah, and there's not a lot of detail, you know, in this article.
That's a victimless crime, I should point out.
But it is, yeah.
One is. The rest of them aren't.
The rest of them are not.
Yeah. But yeah, it says, you know, long rap sheet, and then it, you know, names a few things. But yeah, carrying a concealed gun. But so I guess, you know, he used that in the robbery. Maybe he had been denied a license or something. This would have been in New York, so the gun laws are pretty strict there. Are you even allowed to? You're not allowed to conceal carry there, are you?
Some people are. With a special permit, you are.
With a super special permit.
Yeah, that's only for, like, Mayor Michael Bloomberg and a couple other major celebs and their bodyguards. There's typically the only people in New York who are allowed to carry any sorts of guns at all. But for those
I mean, the history of permits is to prohibit. I mean, that's sort of the reason that permits are given is so that they have a reason to prohibit them. So
it's
well,
so
like
mean.
It was super effective in this case.
Well, the permit didn't work, and it doesn't work. You can't control people. I mean, even here on this show, we're talking about, you know, should I even obey the government's rule about concealed carrying? You know, because they wouldn't know anyway. And they can't really control me. They can only make suggestions and then threats.
You may not want to announce it on social media if you do decide to do that.
Or maybe I do. Maybe that's the way to do it. Another clever way could be to use green screen to say, like, here I am out concealing, and then show that it's not really, I'm not really outside there. I'm not underwater.
Fake crimes. Frame yourself.
Frame myself.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes.
But this is a real crime. This is tragic. And, you know, so for those who haven't heard the story yet, let me just fill you in. Two police officers sitting in the patrol car in Brooklyn were shot at point blank range and killed on Saturday afternoon by a man who had traveled to the city from Baltimore, vowing to kill officers. The suspect then committed suicide with the same gun. And these two officers had nothing, in my view, in reading of this article, they had nothing to do with the killing of Eric Garner, except for that they're a part of the same New York Police Department. I mean, that's crime by association, right? They haven't done anything wrong. They haven't done anything to justify this guy's outrage or anger at them. I mean, he's just picking on two random people.
Yeah, you know, usually, usually I'm one to side against the police in pretty much every altercation that I witnessed. And when something happens to a police officer during an incident that they've escalated, I have a lot of trouble having remorse for them. But in this case, these guys were seized upon at random. Like, he just went up to their car. He initiated, he instigated, he shot first. They didn't do anything. So,
worms. Well, maybe I got guns on the brain, but I'm wondering if they're going to use this as an excuse to crack down on freedoms.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and some of his weird friends. And yes, we're broadcasting this into space.
Shiny badges on your jacket. Shiny badges. Yeah!
This is Davi Barker from shinybadges.com, and I just want to personally apologize for airing a jingle week after week, month after month, that turned out to be such an infectious brain worm. So to make it up to you, I'm offering a free gift. The next time you make a purchase at shinybadges.com, write worms in the transaction comments, and I'll send you something weird.
Tasing you with liberty. Well, we're not tasing anyone tonight, and no, it's sad. Those guys with tasers, two of them got hurt pretty bad, and they didn't deserve it. Well, what does anyone deserve? It's a weird word, but yikes. It's horrible when people are murdered, and that's what happened to two New York police officers. They have a safer job than most people realize. It's not even in the top 10 of safe jobs. Is it? What do you think? Is it number 12 something, Dobby?
Dangerous jobs.
Yeah, of like most deadly jobs.
Yeah, it's not in the top 10 of most dangerous jobs. I think number one is like plumber or like garbage man.
Fisherman.
Or something strange. Something you wouldn't expect. Fisherman, there you go, yeah.
Yeah. But someone is clearly outraged about the Eric Garner death, you know, the guy who was strangled to death by NYPD officers and somehow traveled up to Baltimore, posting along the way on Instagram about the crime he was about to commit, and then thought it was the right thing to do to pull the trigger on these two officers and then himself, leaving behind at least one victim. This the child of one of the officers who's MK, you said he was 13 years old?
Yeah, he was 13. And this is, to me, is the saddest part about this, because I think you can believe that there's a culture of violence surrounding the NYPD. And I think you can believe that the deaths of, you know, especially Eric Garner were wrong and completely unjustified. But it's sad because this kid's going to grow up now. Maybe he's going to join the force later. You know, he's going to have a lot of vengeance for what happened to his dad. And you can believe that there's a culture of violence without believing that, you know, killing cops is the right solution to that. There are a lot of people who, you know, there are a lot of violent cops. It is very scary, but killing them is not the answer here. You know, there are innocent people who are being affected by those actions too. And yeah, this 13-year-old boy, I mean, you know, who knows how he's going to grow up and how he's going to cope with this.
Isn't that what people are talking about when they use the term cycle of violence? I mean, here's these, some police officer somewhere used violence against some guy, and then some other random guy comes up and uses violence against them, thinking that's the right thing to do, and then their son grows up thinking violence is the way to solve complex social problems. The cycle of violence has to end somewhere.
Well, it goes beyond that, too. If this 13-year-old kid is immersed in the controversies about Ferguson and the other recent sort of police shootings, then it's largely about race. So does this kid grow up internalizing the violence that happened to his father as being about a race, the same way that this shooter internalized the violence as being about a uniform?
Whoa, wait, what? Wait a minute. This isn't a racial thing. No one mentioned race.
I'm not saying it is.
Son perceive it to be a racial thing? First of all, the officers who were killed, their names are Rafael Ramos and Wenjian Liu.
And Asian of some kind.
Yeah, so take a guess as to their
No, but what I'm saying is that a lot, I'm not saying that it is, but I'm saying that the way that it's portrayed by a lot of the activists, especially the ones who are the most outraged, is that it is not just about police brutality, but about, but it is about race for a lot of them, to the point that they'll be upset with me if I try and say that it isn't. And so what I'm suggesting is that in the same way that they're collectivizing about a uniform and attacking an officer who didn't, who may not have done it. I mean, it may come out that these guys had horrible careers, but that's neither here nor there. But this 13-year-old boy who may grow up with this vendetta, who may grow up to be a police officer, remembering the violence against his father, if he remembers the riots being about race, does he internalize, I mean, because the shooter's African-American, does he internalize it being about race and collectivize about race the same way the shooter collectivized about uniform? Like, is that a further cycle of violence? That's my point. I'm not saying, I'm hoping that's not too nuanced.
No, that's an interesting thought. I can see that. Hadn't considered. Now, what would you say to Mr. Brinsley, this man who committed the shootings, if you could speak to him, but you know, before he were committing these acts, or while he was on Instagram, because there must have been presumably people liking his comments, right?
I would want to give him a chance to speak before I said anything
to him. Mm-hmm. You would listen. That's an interesting answer.
Because here's the thing, like, this is, I've been watching this happen since Columbine. I mean, you may know too, I've written a pretty popular article on shooting rampages specifically and copycats and things like that. And what I've noticed is that it's often the reason that people copycat big headline shooters is because they feel unheard and they see it as a way to be heard right before they commit suicide, right before they, you know, it's either they kill themselves or it's suicide by cop or whatever, but they see it as a way to be heard and they're sort of like desperate, you know, whatever it is that their issue is. And so it wouldn't surprise me if, first off, coverage of this probably incentivizes it to some extent. When you glorify them, it incentivizes the next one. That's why you have copycats. But it is largely, it is a class of people that for various reasons feel unheard. And so I would listen before I spoke. And I would hope that that would give them enough pause to reconsider.
Man, that's beautiful.
I would have to agree and really try to empathize with them and understand where their frustration is coming from. A lot of people are frustrated about the violence that we're seeing from the police, about the culture of police brutality that now more and more people are paying attention to because there's more media focused on it now. But there's a good reason to be outraged. There's, you know, people feel like their concerns aren't being addressed. And when you have this culture of police brutality, a consequence of that is going to be people pushing back and unfortunately committing the same types of crimes against the police. And this is a backlash of the culture we're seeing. And I think he felt that there was no other option because the court system isn't punishing these people. You know, we have no kind of justice system to speak of. You know, you have things like the thin blue line. Other cops aren't going to necessarily put their jobs on the line to speak out about some of these things. And I think people who tend to, you know a lot more about this and pay attention to the police brutality cases, you know, feel futile. They feel there's nothing left to do. They're driven to that point. So, you know, listening to these people and understanding that, you know, they feel that there's no other options out there. And, you know, there needs to be, you know, some empathy there, but also like, hey, you know, let them speak first. And then, you know, anyone in that situation probably try to dissuade the kind of violent tendencies, but yeah, listening, because these people feel like they don't have a voice.
This might be a little uncomfortable. What if this is what the Second Amendment looks like? Like, if we have a culture with increasingly militarized police, and we have a right, which is by and large there to resist, you know, to resist the state. That's why the Second Amendment was in the Constitution in the first place. That's why the Third Amendment is that you won't charter troops in your home or won't be forced to. And you can't expect all members of a citizenry to be perfectly principled voluntarists and non-aggression principle adherents. So is this what an armed polite society looks like
No.
in a militarized police state.
I don't think
like,
so.
That's what I mean.
Like, random killing is never justified.
No, I'm not saying it's justified. I'm saying, is this what it looks like?
So I think it's okay to say this action is wrong and immoral, but that it is a natural consequence of the militarized environment. This is what you're going to continue to see. And because people don't abide by the non-aggression principle, because they don't feel that nonviolence is the answer. So, and that's largely a part of our culture too, is it, you know, things are still very violent interpersonally.
We all here on this show watch the police's actions carefully and have for years. And it's no surprise to us to see overreach or abuse of power by police towards citizens. But why is it the subject of so much media attention today? What changed in the last 6 months or so that brought this to the mainstream?
Maybe we've kind of reached that kind of peak saturation with it. I think, you know, instead of people just putting videos up on YouTube, now you have major media sources covering these incidences, and you're seeing more and more of them being reported by media sources that have more access to larger audiences. So I think people are just being exposed to it more, whereas it was always there to begin with. A lot of people, I mean, you can go back and watch videos from, you know, even decades ago, when people were, you know, filming the police. And, you know, the brutality has kind of always been there, but we're getting saturated with it a lot more now.
Yeah, it seems so impossible to ignore.
I mean, I always like to bring up Rodney King, because Rodney King's experience was not entirely unique. What made Rodney King's an incident was that it was on tape, and it was sort of the advent of personal VHS handheld camcorders made it so that everybody saw what happened to him. But the thing is that that was a kettle that was steaming before it even happened. And there were lots of people filing their complaints against the police and being told, oh, I'm sorry, you just don't have sufficient evidence for us to, you know, do anything about it. Mm-hmm. And then suddenly there was evidence, there was video evidence, and still it appeared that nothing would happen. And that like, it's like being told that the excuse you were given all along was not a real excuse ever. You were just being blown off the whole time. And so the kettle boils over. Right. And so this is this incident and the more recent incidents, but it's also a long history of aggressions by police against, you know, largely unarmed civilians. So, it isn't always about the particular incident we're talking about. It is about a trend. It is about a growing distrust and discontent with the disparity of power.
I think you hit it with the Rodney King statement. It was about video. Video is what made that situation as popular or as well known as it became. And video is what's changing policing today. I mean, Obama just went on record saying he wants to spend $500 million on equipping the police, something like that, with video cameras. And this wasn't possible, 5 years ago? And now it's demanded by the entire nation. People are saying, well, why don't we have police wearing video cameras in the 21st
century? He could save all of that money if he just said at a federal level and mandated all the way down the chain of command, civilians could record police officers. We're all carrying our cameras around all the time. We don't necessarily need one on every police officer all the time. We just need permission to record our interactions with them.
Yeah, but then then journalists will do independent reporting and they'll obstruct investigations. They'll be standing in the way. Isn't that the argument that statists would make against recording police?
They'll interfere. Care.
You don't care. Well, there happens to be a man, a heroic man known as James Robin Hood Cleveland here in Keene, who is facing charges from the state for video recording police right outside of an active crime scene. And that was exactly their claim, that, you know, you can't record the police here because you're too close to what we're doing. What do you think about that argument?
Zoom lens.
All you can do, I guess.
We have the technology.
Yes.
Civilian drones. Put a drone above the scene.
That is very hopeful.
Well, see, yeah. I mean,
people are recording the police. Drones. Yeah, there's even a contest going on at a fantastic website, copblock.org, where the prizes, well, you can win some Bitcoin, some internet money, and some silver and stuff just for submitting a video entitled "Why I Film the Police." So this isn't any kind of plug or anything. I don't get paid to do this, but I think that's a good idea. Why not film the police? And if you already do it, why not tell other people why you do it? You could win some money, and you can encourage other people to do the same.
Worms.
And you might save some lives.
Worms.
Worms.
It'll change the paradigm, that's for sure.
You and the hamster in your brain are listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends.
Are you tired of your taxes funding endless occupations around the world? Antiwar.com is run by people who understand that wars abroad become wars at home, wars on our freedoms. Antiwar.com is dedicated to bringing you the latest in news, views, interviews, and reviews from the top movers and shakers in the anti-occupation movement. Antiwar.com has it all, from thorough foreign policy analysis to interviews with whistleblowers who used to run the military-industrial complex. Anti-war, pro-free market. That's antiwar.com.
Guns, freedom, Bitcoin, and oh man. Two officers are dead. That's so sad. This could have been prevented. If only this guy, this shooter, had known about all of the positive, peaceful solutions for bringing about more accountable police. Like what? Like what could he have known about, Davy Barker?
I mean, I'm not really sure when it comes to... Go-to has always been peaceful streets and cop lock and sort of like community organizing around the idea of both, you know, identifying police and making them known and making their sort of reputations on the line, but also just recording them and sort of raising awareness about, you know, what they're up to and hopefully, you know, changing their behavior by publicizing it. But I mean,
this has become a thing now.
This is an attack that happened on camera. Like the thing that he's upset about, the Eric Garner, the I Can't Breathe incident, it happened on camera. So
yeah, there's not much that filming can do to prevent that, is there? So what's next?
But,
I mean,
you know, that had nothing to do with the officers he attacked, though. Like, some, is the point.
Some people say that the solution is to look longer term. Like, you can't intervene in between a rabid dog or a wolverine and a human being, or a bear and a human being who's being mauled. You can't intervene between a police officer and a victim who's being arrested.
Although I've seen that. There's a video that came out almost the same time of a man intervening that was pretty fantastic. There was an officer was sort of manhandling this guy who was sort of on the ground and screaming and saying, I didn't do anything. And this guy comes up from the crowd and just shoves the cop off of him and sort of holds the cop on the ground. And then as soon as the other cops get involved, he puts his hands behind his head and he lays on his belly and he doesn't resist anymore. And so they...
What?
Well, you know, it's like when you go into a submission pose, they just sort of pick you up and haul you off. So that de-escalates, right? So when you put your hands behind your bed and your head and lay on your belly, they just cuff you and pull you away, right?
Sometimes, I mean, it might be an excuse for them to get a couple of kicks in.
Yeah, it might. And I'm actually, he did.
Times.
Yeah.
Okay, well, no surprise there. That's what I expected.
But it did de-escalate.
It redirected the attention toward him instead of the man who they were attacking, and then ended the incident. I mean, with his arrest, unfortunately. But
yeah.
Well, I'm going to go ahead and say that I'm okay with people intervening in these extremely violent situations. I don't think it's a good idea for your individual safety. But I think that if you want to change a culture that has so much violence entrenched in it, that you have to provide some kind of negative incentive for the police to correct their behavior, because they're used to getting away with things. And if enough people say, no, we're not going to let you get away with things, we're not going to let you just harass people and just beat up people and be bullies for no reason. I mean, I'm a very nonviolent person, but you know, when you see a cop initiating violence on someone else, you know, they have this badge and this uniform that supposedly protects them, but ultimately that's another human assaulting another human. And I don't have any problem with people using defensive actions, you know, to stop the cop from hurting someone else. I mean, again, I don't think it's going to end well, but I'm not opposed to it.
I am, if that person still pays taxes, because they haven't done everything that they could do up to that point to prevent the cop from assaulting a peaceful person. Right. So like if,
well, that's a long-term strategy and short-term strategy.
Though. Hey, well, okay, so sure, if you're seeing police attacking somebody and you say, hey, I'm going to pull this police officer off of him, but you pay that officer, I mean, what kind of disincentive are you really providing? Is he going to understand your justification and your moral outrage and you're preventing him from doing his job? No, he's going to misconstrue your actions as interfering, and he's going to seem and appear more justified. So I wish we could cut this off financially by disincentivizing the police the same way we disincentivize bad businesses. We say no more.
Yeah.
No more business for you. There are solutions, though. There's Peacekeeper is a great way to connect with your community and protect yourselves. There's coplock.org, a website where you can upload videos of police acting good and bad, and a few others. But don't lose hope. Don't act like this crazy guy. There's always a peaceful solution to achieve peace in the long term. Violence won't get there. It only confuses the situation. Worms. Worms.
Having outgrown childish libertarian fantasies, I now believe in worms! What is Libertarians Against Humanity? It's the only unofficial Cards Against Humanity expansion pack by libertarians, for libertarians, and against libertarians. Libertarians Against Humanity is free to play online, or join the Indiegogo campaign to get physical copies and other perks to play with friends or statists you haven't defooed yet. Because if we don't laugh, the statists win.
Not recommended for faint heart, thin skins, or those who easily wrestle jimmies. Consult a physician if you experience chronic blood pressure or laughter lasts longer than 4 hours.
That's libertariansagainsthumanity.com.
Do you believe in free speech? Jay Raven had her True Shives YouTube channel taken down. We believe this censorship was wrong, and we believe the channel is a clear example of free speech. Many people are bullied on the internet, but Jay Raven actually stood up to the bullying. She has filed a self-defense lawsuit against the individuals who took down the channel. The outcome of this suit could be very important to the future of free speech. Learn more at TrueShives.com. That's Tango, Romeo, Uniform, Sierra, Hotel, India, Bravo, Echo, Sierra.com. TrueShives.com.
Worms, worms.
Meow.
Wow.
Meow.
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 Meow therapy. Meow with me.
Meow.
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 Freedom fiends.
This is Derek J. Broadcasting from underwater. Only radio show I know to do that. Now, Michael Dean, of course, is away cleaning his gun collection. With me, it's Davi Zombie Barker of SurvivorMax.com and MK Lords from BitcoinNotBombs.com.
Yeah.
Speaking of Bitcoin, hey, there's some hacker, cyber criminal in the news, MK. Mr. Charlie Schramm, he's apparently the former CEO of BitInstant, a company that I knew and loved. It was legendary. It helped me get Bitcoin, but it also helped some bad people get Bitcoin. Is that why he's in trouble?
Oh, I guess so. Yeah, this very dangerous character, Charlie Schramm, he was caught buying and helping other people buy and sell Bitcoin. They're calling it money laundering. Unfortunately, he was sentenced to 2 years in prison on Friday, charged with money laundering.
Money laundering isn't itself a crime. I want to point that out. Like, what is it? Exchanging goods for money? I mean,
money. Yeah.
Well, how is that a crime at all? I don't see any victims involved.
Money laundering is not even a real crime that there isn't even a non-criminal word for it. Like it's just owning something. That's what money laundering is.
Mm-hmm. So, but he didn't ask permission to transmit money is really what this is about.
He was owning without a permit.
It was unlicensed money transmission. So aiding and abetting an unlicensed money transmission. So yeah, they didn't have the proper licensing to be able to do that. So they're saying it's money laundering and they didn't have the right license. And if you've ever tried to read through any of this anti-money laundering legislation, it's already really, really draconian and really, it's ridiculous what they'll punish people for. And FinCEN will send out these reports too, letting you know, like, oh, we busted this person for laundering, you know, $10,000 and, you know, in money or something. And it's like, really? They're going after really low level.
Yeah, you know, this people. Is one
these,
of those.
These laws protect the banks and the corporations, not the average, you know.
Exactly. And it's so obvious to people. You know, I used to at least think, well, they mean well. These regulators, they're trying to get the bad guys. But here's one of these examples where it's like this Bitcoin guy, Charlie Shrem, he's 25 years old. He ran a successful, multi-million dollar company with this new revolutionary currency, Bitcoin, sentenced to 2 years in prison for owning a piece of digital property that the government doesn't even really know or understand. And then they're saying that it's unlicensed, which is really the theme of tonight's show, right? Like not having the right permits. Oh, he didn't have the right piece of paper from the government stamped, you know, what?
The power to permit is the power to prohibit.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So what upsets me a little bit is Shrem pleaded guilty to one count of aiding and abetting an unlicensed money transmission in September. So he was facing apparently up to 6 years in prison after striking the plea deal. Before the plea deal, he was facing 30 years. So this is a strategy that he took, I guess, of his own free will, but really, isn't that coercion when you're being threatened with
when you threaten
serious
someone
time?
To get them to go along with your program? Yeah, that's what that is.
Yeah.
Well, this is how it works. This is how the justice system works to trap people. They force you to make an impossible choice, and they force you to take the plea deal a lot of times. By threatening a much harsher sentence. So a lot of times people's hands are tied, and a lot of people view it as if they can't fight back, and it's not the fight isn't worth it. And that's really how they trap people.
I think the judge was also trying to set an example here with Charlie Shrem because he was one of the first big Bitcoin CEOs of any import. And he makes an odd statement to the court here. Listen to this. He says, quote, "I screwed up. The Bitcoin community, they're scared. And there's no money laundering going on anymore. They're terrified. Bitcoin is my baby. It's my whole world and my whole life. It's why I was put on this earth to do. I need to be out there. If Your Honor grants me that, I can be out there in the world, making sure that people don't do the same stupid things that I did."
What did he... What? Is there like... Because money laundering, like, it is only a statutory crime because it's associated with other crimes, right? Like, it's to obscure money earned through allegedly ill-gotten ways, right? So what is the crime here that is supposed to have gone on?
Allegedly, the person to whom the Bitcoins were sold through his company, BitInstant. So BitInstant was this company that helped people get Bitcoin. They had cash or any other kind of government currency, and they could give it to BitInstant, and they would receive Bitcoins. So anyone could do this, good person or bad person. And it turns out that BitInstant gave some Bitcoins to some people who used those Bitcoins on a website called the Silk Road, which is an underground dark web marketplace, a place for the black market to live online. And people use Bitcoin there to transact. You know, they use it as digital online money. And one of the vendors was apparently transacting with BitInstant. And this is what they call money laundering in this case, that one of these vendors was selling drugs in exchange for Bitcoin, and then he used, I guess, BitInstant to do the transaction, to, you know, convert the dollars in Bitcoin.
That sounds like what every airport currency exchange does.
Yeah, I mean, I don't see the Federal Reserve being prosecuted for handing out dollars when drug busts happen. Like, oh, these drug cartels are using dollars. Get the Fed! You know, they're producing this horrible currency. These people, these criminals, got their hands on these dollars. You know, arrest the bankers. No one says that.
Well, yeah, like in the case of HSBC, they laundered millions of dollars to Mexican drug cartels that ended in, you know, resulted in the deaths of, you know, countless people. And yeah, you never saw one of their executives go to jail. And these were people who they proved knew they were laundering money for these cartels. And yeah, you're not seeing them spend any time in jail.
Well, it just doesn't make any sense that he should be charged with a crime for selling people the money that they used to do a crime. Like, I don't know. I could see a sort of an example being made of someone who walks into a gun store and says, like, hey, I need to go kill my wife. I need to buy a gun right now. And you're like, hey, man, you can't buy a gun. You can't buy a gun from me. No way, no how. You're going to commit a crime with it. And if someone were to similarly say, you know, hey, I want these Bitcoins so that I can go, I don't know, go do evil with it, then I guess it would be incumbent upon you to do the right thing and not sell them Bitcoins. But if they're just trading peacefully, what's the harm in that?
You know, the other theme here is the war on drugs. I mean, like, he's accused of helping somebody purchase drugs, which have no business being illegal anyway. The same way that, like, Eric Garner is the only crime he's accused of committing that brought on this police brutality, this murder, was that he was selling what they call loosies, which is single cigarettes after he's purchased a pack of cigarettes so that people can avoid the cigarette tax, which is just sort of a soft war on tobacco. So, I mean, like, these things have no business being crimes anyway.
And I don't think they really avoid the taxes at all. I mean, in the case of Garner, if he bought the pack, didn't he have to pay taxes?
This is state think, right? Like, if I purchase art supplies, I pay sales taxes when I purchase art supplies. Now, you would think those would be free and clear, my art supplies. But if I make something with those art supplies and then resell that thing, I'm supposed to charge sales tax again, even though sales taxes have already been, you know, spent on these things. So it's just, yeah, they just, it's just exponential growth, right?
That's like, interesting. I never thought about that. Like, how many times is sales tax applied to a particular item by the time it reaches, you know, the register or my pocket?
Well, this is, again, you know, permits and prohibition. I can't buy things at wholesale prices without a business permit or business license. So presumably sales taxes would be different if I was purchasing as a wholesaler. I can't, and I try. Like, I've contacted these companies to buy things in bulk because I'm a merchandiser, right? And they're like, "Oh yeah, without your whatever secret tax number thing, I can't sell you." There are vendors that cannot sell to me because I don't have the appropriate paperwork.
Here's one of the villains in the story. Prosecuting attorney Preet Bharara submitted a filing to the judge, urging the judge to sentence Shrem to prison time. This person, Preet, really wanted punishment. Quote, "The story of this case is not one of tragedy, but farce. Throughout the year of 2012, Charlie Shrem made a mockery of the anti-money laundering laws." What? I mean, and who even cares about the money laundering laws? Are people, is that something that sways the public opinion? Like, oh my goodness. You know, murders, we're talking about the NYPD officers killed. That's a real crime. I mean, gosh, people's lives are affected. Money laundering laws? Yawn. I mean, who gets into that?
And we should reassure the viewers that what I found interesting about Charlie's statement is he says, you know, the Bitcoin community, they're scared and there's no money laundering going on anymore. No, I want to reassure everyone, there's a lot of money laundering still going on in Bitcoin. That's not going to be stopped anytime soon.
What in the world does that even mean?
It sounds like he's just trying to lie to the judge, just trying to say like, oh, please don't hurt me.
Well, it's like Stockholm Syndrome kind of thing. You can see it towards the end of the quote. He's like, just let me out and I'll make sure that other people don't do the same stupid things that I did. And that's basically like, please, you know, don't punish me. You know, I'll do the right thing. I'll abide by your laws and your rules. And, you know, I'm going to be the kind of informant is almost what it sounds like. And I, you know, he was under a lot of pressure. I mean, the psychological things that they do to you when you're in this situation are, you know, terrible. But yeah, I mean, that statement kind of shows the Stockholm Syndrome that you get when you're involved in this kind of system, when you have these charges thrown at you and the intimidation that they use. And you will do anything to get out of going to jail up to a certain point. I think a lot of people will. Not everyone.
Well, why did he stop at money laundering? Why didn't he promise the judge that no drugs would ever be sold again?
Right.
Because he knows he can. He's making stuff up to appease the judge and make his sentence lighter. You know, I'm not a religious person anymore, but when I was, I would say, oh, God, get me out of this situation, and I'll do anything. I'll turn my life around. I'll be good. Sounds like that's what he's doing.
Yeah.
Worms.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends, tasing you with liberty since 2011. Learn more at freedomfiends.com.
Now that the elections are over and liberty has slipped even further away, it's time to try yet another political organization. Campaign for a Longer Leash is a nonpartisan group of pups and dogs dedicated to fighting for longer leashes for all. We're not talking about no leashes, that would be catarchy. We just want the limited leash that the Founding Fathers promised us. As Bone Barklin once said, a longer leash if you can keep it, ma'am. For more info, go to facebook.com/campaignforalongerleash.
Hey, this is Squiskar Squiggles from Death Clocks, and you are listening to the Freedoms Fiends on the, you know, the radios. And I guess I says worms now, so there you go.
You've read books, attended lectures, and you know the Constitution well enough to know it's a well-crafted blueprint to create an ever-increasing federal empire. But there's still one thing missing.
Buttons!
Freedom Fiends now has buttons. You'll get state speech is hate speech, guns and weed,
buy sheep for sheep on sheep,
and two designs for the Freedom Fiends. Wear them with pride. Use them to start conversations with statists.
It's only $10 for 10 buttons, including shipping.
Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says buttons.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network, a collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
Worms. Yeah, Bitcoin Bigwig goes to prison. Well, he hasn't gone yet. He gets to turn himself in 90 days. Has some time to do some blogging and whatever sorts of revolutionary acts of releasing technology onto the world that he wants to do. That's exciting. I'm sad that he's going to waste away in a prison cell for 2 years. But the government, they had to make their point, right? They had to show their teeth and show that you must obey them or there will be consequences. I guess.
Yeah,
I
mean, otherwise it would be anarchy.
It would just be a mess.
Well, I think that's
all kinds of money laundering and drug buying.
Be money all over the place. Nobody would know where it came from. You just it just appear places. Be like, was this drug money or is this Girl Scout cookie money? I don't know.
Yeah, you know, I can't really tell where my money's been currently unless I use that website, Where's George, or any of the other bill tracking sites. But hey, speaking of this Bitcoin guy, Charlie Shrem. You guys sort of saw him. He was arrested sort of famously outside of the Bitcoin Miami conference in, what, 2013? Last year?
This year, 2014.
This year. Holy moly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so that was, what, in January of this year?
Yeah, beginning of this year.
And it was a big deal. Because this guy, he was arrested right at the airport when he got home, right? He wasn't around the comfort and supportive area of Miami where all of his Bitcoin friends were. He had just landed home in New York, and that's when the police apparently surrounded him and arrested him?
Yeah, I believe so, yeah.
Yeah. How did you right first hear about this story? Because, MK, you were at a conference with him.
Yeah, I was at the conference, and it was actually as I was on my way driving back up to Pensacola from Miami. It's only about a 12-hour drive, and I was just looking through, just browsing through news, and I found out Charlie Shrem had been arrested, and I was like, what? It was really, you know, it was really depressing to read about, but it was something that it had kind of been on my mind since I'd really been looking into Bitcoin. Like, what are they going to use to target Bitcoiners? How are they going to paint them as the bad guys? You know, who are they going to arrest and what are they going to arrest them for? And, I saw that, you know, it was, you know, transmitting money without a license, things like that. I mean, and this is something they bust people for all the time. This is something that the financial crime enforcement people are, I mean, they get people all the time, and the licenses are extremely difficult to get. So that was when I kind of realized, okay, they might be doing more of this. They're going to be focusing on money laundering and things like that, because it is easy to do with Bitcoin. In all honesty, I mean, it's easy to do with cash, too. It's still being done. But with Bitcoin, yeah, I mean, you can launder money.
So what's the solution? I mean, for people to openly and flagrantly violate these laws and show the government that people won't be stopped from transmitting Bitcoin without licenses? I mean, are there any companies out there that are operating openly without a license?
Well, Bitcoin Not Bombs, we don't have any kind of, license for what we do.
We issue
the intergalactic bit license.
We have an intergalactic Bitcoin license that gives us full permission to utter, transmit, and launder money anywhere in the known universe and galaxy, I guess. Intergalactic. Yeah.
Yeah, so you can do it as publicly as you want to. I think with the money laundering thing, you know, whether you're out there doing it super publicly or not, I mean, you're still making a statement. And with Bitcoin, it's easy to do it pretty privately, too.
Yeah, I just think Bitcoin has some pretty cool features that I had never seen before. And since you guys both work in the realm of charities, I figured I'd mention one. With these unlicensed Bitcoin transmitters, one example of one would be a Bitcoin vending machine, just a simple box where you feed in dollars and it sends Bitcoin right to your smartphone. Well, you can, instead of putting your smartphone up to the screen, you can put any QR code, really. So if you want to make a donation to your favorite charity, you can put up their QR code, feed in bills, and then send your money halfway across the world if you want to. Mm-hmm. I mean, never before has that been possible, as far as I know.
It also creates a pretty outrageous burden of proof if they want to try and prove the source of money or prove money laundering occurred or whatever, because anybody who's ever had access to your public address can put money there. It's not like they can prove that you're the one who put money there.
Yeah, right. I found that interesting. You know, what if the government made some claim that a terrorist had donated to you or had given you money, and then you are somehow responsible for their beliefs or something. You know, I think I think Ron Paul was accused of that. Like, you've got some crazy donors, you know, and it's like, yeah, you know, I don't agree with everything they say, but I'll take their money.
Yep.
Sure.
Worms.
And who can stop them? Who could stop you?
Nobody.
Worms.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. Go to freedomfiends.com to help keep it drone-proof. Creamy Radio Audio. Want caviar sound on a cat food budget? Creamy Radio Audio by the Freedom Fiends has great free tips so you can sound like a pro without spending like one. The most powerful form of human communication is one person speaking to another. But if people have to suffer through your sound, they'll change the channel and miss your message. With articles on microphones, preamps, recorders, mastering, recording remotely over the internet, doing a podcast,
even getting a show on actual radio, the Freedom Fiends show you what they use and where to get it. Whether you're a talk show host, voiceover artist, podcaster, evangelist, or just want to record your loved ones for the ages, at Creamy Radio Audio, the Freedom Fiends will help you make the most of your sound. Creamy Radio Audio will help you speak to the world with sound that will make people want to keep listening. Check out creamyradioaudio.com. That's creamyradioaudio.com.
Hey, this is Nathan Explosion from Death Clock, and you're listening to Freedom Fiends on the radio. Worms.
Freedom Fiends, are you fiending for more liberty? Well, the cycle of violence ends here tonight on this very broadcast. We're ending it. Put down your guns, pick up an instrument, sing a song of love. Do you play any instruments, MK, Davi?
So I grew up around musicians. My dad's family were all musicians, and I fiddled around with a bunch of different instruments and never settled on one. I probably played clarinet for the longest and then guitar and bass after that a little bit, but I'm way out of practice. So I think I jumped around on, you know, didn't commit to one specific instrument, so I never learned one super well.
Do you ever just mess around and make up a song?
Oh, yeah. Not very good at it, but
Davi,
it's fun.
I imagine you played drums.
No, but I always wanted to. I have kind of the same story. I grew up, my mom's side of the family is very musical, and so I dabbled in a lot of things. I played both rhythm and bass guitar in a number of bands, but yeah, also been more than 10 years since I played.
I dabbled. I took lessons in piano when I was a kid because my older sister took piano lessons. And I wanted to be cool like her, and It was sort of discouraging because she's older, she's better, more practice. And, like, I know that's supposed to encourage people. That's supposed to be like, oh, that's what I aspire to. But for some reason, for me, it was just like, I'll just choose something else, you know? And I never really could stick to that instrument. I think it was, you know, living in my sister's shadow.
Yeah.
You know, it's one of those things. But it's singing songs and writing songs for freedom. I think that's a better way to achieve peace in this world than through guns and coercion and violence and government and laws, which is why we're talking about Charlie Schramm, who was prosecuted by the feds for possessing Bitcoin and for essentially being one of the first successful Bitcoin CEOs.
Shame Bitcoin's on them. An instrument.
Exactly. That's what I was thinking of. Bringing it full circle. Boom. And one of the instruments that another hero of mine, Edward Snowden, used is a computer. A computer is an instrument.
Also a tool
that makes us more free or can enslave us, depending on how you use it. So you saw an interesting movie recently, Davi, called Citizen 4.
Yeah, I went out and I saw Citizen 4 last night with my wife, and it's a documentary on Edward Snowden, specifically sort of the time he spent in Hong Kong with Glenn Greenwald, sort of, you know, strategizing about how to release all of these documents that he'd leaked. And man, it's kind of mind-blowing. Like I followed the story while it was happening. So there wasn't anything in the documentary that was new to me. But it was really interesting to, like, see his face and see his demeanor and hear him answer more personal questions and, you know, see what was motivating him, you know? I thought that was really the best part of the film.
Did you have any doubts that maybe this was a psyop, this was produced by the CIA to make Edward Snowden seem more reasonable or likable, or that this... I don't know.
Why would they do that?
I have no idea. I'm just... You know, wild speculations that people get about these shadowy figures who live in secret. You know, it was interesting. I saw this film as well. I saw it in Boston, and the crowd who was out at the theater, I think, are probably, they've got to be among the coolest people on earth, right? Because they're following a story about Edward Snowden, this hero who values truth so much.
Mm-hmm.
And No, there was crying. There was laughter. I think there were a lot of times where we were surprised. One of the moments when I gasped was they show a book that Edward Snowden is reading, and it's by Radley Balko, who I know to be an author writing about police abuse. You know, this is one of the stories and things that we talk about on the show. And you know, he's someone who's an expert in the field. So it's interesting that Edward Snowden is interested in that topic.
Do you know what book it was?
I don't remember off the top of my head. I remember that the night of watching it, but at the moment, no.
But I also noticed Homeland by Cory Doctorow in the film, which is a kind of a sci-fi adventure about hackers and cryptography and stuff like that.
Yes, 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 exactly. That was exciting. You also got to see his girlfriend in the movie, which makes it a lot more personal. You know, this is a real guy. He's got his whole life and some sacrifices. I mean, he gave up seeing this woman for a very long time and didn't know if he was ever going to see her again. So
yeah,
you know,
risk never seeing his family again.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And he talked about that, too. Like, a lot of this footage is taken from the time when he was, you know, ostensibly missing, according to the rest of the world. And so, yeah, he was essentially saying that, like, you know, he might have to break ties with his family and everybody because the closer he was with them, the more in danger they might be, depending on how the state wanted to react to what he released.
Did you get any
sacrifice to make?
Yeah. Did you get any sense of his motivation?
Oh, yeah. He said it outright. Essentially, he saw a disparity in power between the ruler and the ruled, and that he wanted to tip that scale the other way a little bit.
Yeah, I can't imagine putting myself in his shoes, knowing what he must know about the horrors that he may endure. I mean, we just recently learned about the CIA torture revelations. Did he know about that, and was he thinking, I could end up in one of these salt pits in Afghanistan being tortured and having my family threatened?
Well, a lot of that information's been out for a long time, too, even before the torture report came out in Dirty Wars. Jeremy Scahill kind of goes into that. You know, they've known about these extreme torture methods for a really long time, and it's now just now kind of getting declassified, and more of the really horrendous details are getting put out there. I'm willing to bet he definitely knew about that, and it's interesting. You kind of look at that and you see the people who were calling for him to be thrown in jail without a trial or thrown in one of these camps. And now, you know, we know about it. And it's really horrific to think that people think of him as a traitor instead of a hero and someone who had to make a lot of personal sacrifices to get this information out.
Edward Snowden is one of these classic canary in the coal mines where you can see the surveillance state taking shape and starting to criminalize, you know, people and behaviors like what he engaged in. It tells me, as the average Joe, okay, I better up my security. I better, you know, take some more personal responsibility to make sure that what I do in private is truly private. Like use encryption, for example, which only takes a little bit of setting up to, and maybe what, an hour to learn about.
That was kind of a funny scene in the film, too, about him sort of tutoring Glenn Greenwald on how to properly encrypt his computer and sort of, you know, jiving him a little bit about sort of the reckless things that he had been doing with his computer when it comes to that sort of thing.
And there's a good article on The Intercept, which is Glenn Greenwald's project, and it's called Ed Snowden Taught Me to Smuggle Secrets Past the Government. This is how you can do it. And the author goes through the process of setting up encryption. He kind of tells you what Snowden did and how Snowden, you know, had to communicate these thoughts to people who weren't really familiar with encryption. Laura Poitras and Glenn Greenwald I think Laura used it, but Glenn Greenwald wasn't using it at the time. So he had to teach this other person to teach him how to use it, basically, to get through. The guy's name was Micah Lee. So it's a really interesting article to read. And if you're not using encryption, it's not that hard to set up. You know, it sounds like it's kind of complicated to set up, but it's really not too bad. And it's something that, you know, why not use the tools we have available?
When did you first set up encryption on your computer, MK?
Let's see. It would have been at the end of last year. And so about a year or a little over a year.
Was it the Snowden revelations that inspired you to do that?
That was a part of it. A part of it was being involved in Bitcoin and learning more about cryptography in general, and just saying, seeing, you know, oh wow, we have these tools available. Like, you know, why am I not using it? And then there were some other people that I personally knew that were encouraging me to use it. And some people that I wanted to interview too, that were like, I'll only communicate over encrypted emails. So there are some people who will only use it. And if you want to access them, if you want to interview them for a show or something, then that's the way they want you to communicate with them.
So. Is this the way the world is going? Is this what you use, Davi?
I'm kind of a Luddite. I don't use it as much as I probably should. But I got involved as the editor of DailyAnarchist.com. When I took that job, the owner of the site essentially insisted that we operate through encryption, and he won't communicate with anybody any other way. And so he kind of gave me a crash course in how to at least communicate with him. And if other people have insisted, I've sort of gotten set up. But I don't really understand it as thoroughly as I should.
So, I feel like we need more people like that. We need more people insisting, this is the only communication style you get with me, okay?
You know, he's also the reason I'm involved in Bitcoin, because like shortly after I took that job, he decided to take the site full Bitcoin and said, hey, if you still want to get paid for this job, you'll take Bitcoin.
Wow.
And I'm like, all right, give me your Bitcoin.
Yeah, there you go.
And I didn't know what to do with it at first, but after a while, I had a pretty, you know, nice little savings going on. So that was cool.
That's such a great concept. I love the idea. You know, our communications are typically private. When you and I, Davi, are having a conversation in a room somewhere, it's just you and me who has access to that conversation. But when we're communicating over the internet, essentially the whole world has access to that conversation, or anyone who wants to have access could. And so I think that's why encryption is so important. It brings the internet back to that space that we're familiar with and that we're operating in. We're operating as if we're in private, but we're not. So maybe encryption could give us more power.
Yeah. And there's a good video. I think Stephanie Murphy narrates it. There's a good YouTube video. If you just type up, you know, how to set up PGP encryption, there's a good video that she narrates, and it walks you through step by step. And that's what I used to learn. And it was very, very easy to set up, you know, very clear and easy to understand.
I throw the word encryption around like it's some magic wand, like, but there's different kinds of encryption, right? Like there's different styles. There's different things you can encrypt. You can encrypt your whole computer, your hard drive, your email, or just your chats, you know, just chat communication. So all
different
levels.
Yeah, I'm talking
about
email encryption.
Yeah, or even your texts. How important is that to be able to encrypt the communication that you sent via text or on your phone?
Oh, yeah, I have that now, too. I think it's called Phone Encrypts Your Phone Calls. And then I forget the name of the app for text messages. But, yeah, I have
text
that, too.
Text Secure is a good
one. Yeah, that's the one I have. Yeah.
And those are free pieces of software that anyone can download and use. I think they're available on both iPhone and Android platforms. So, hey, there's something you can use to increase the power and privacy in your life. A little bit of encryption. Absolutely. Thanks, Edward Snowden, for helping us realize how important privacy really is.
Worms.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. So much truth, it hurts.
This show survives on donations from fiends like you. We put that money back into our show and Liberty Outreach and donate most our ad space to Liberty organizations that make a difference. We're also a teaching hospital, educating the next generation of Liberty Talkers on the skills needed to keep the radio flame of truth burning into the future. Put your money where your heart is and make a donation of any amount to the Freedom Fiends. Please go to freedomfiends.com and click on the spinning coin on any post.
The Central Scrutinizer is a Soviet-style Leviathan trying to keep track of all you do. That's why I use a VPN, or virtual private network, from Bola VPN. Bola VPN is inexpensive, secure, and will allow you to use your computer without leaving a trail. Bola VPN is now also offering torrent seed boxes for safely sharing media with the world. And if you open a support ticket saying you heard about them from the Freedom Fiends, they'll add 3 extra days free. That's Bola VPN at BOLEHVPN.net.
Monarchy now. Man,
Freedom Fiends. Welcome to Redemption in the Third Act, where hopefully we can calm the hamster in your brain and wrap it all up under one umbrella and tie it with a bow. We've talked about gun denials tonight, some ear witnesses who heard some police get shot, and then some Instagram photos of a crazy man planning his murder. Charlie Shrem, a non-criminal, apologizing to a judge for his victimless crime and then being sentenced to 2 years in prison. And finally, Edward Snowden in this Citizen 4 movie, capturing the hearts and attention of audiences nationwide as he has not more revelations, but more to his story than we previously got out of Glenn Greenwald. And so where does this take us, Davi Zombie Barker?
You know, say what you will about monarchy, at least it's based on property rights.
What about monarchy?
It's, well, you know, whose property? Owns everything.
Yeah, the king owns everything. At least it's consistent. It's easy to understand, right? Who's in charge? The king's in charge.
You're not bogged down with any pesky, you know, democratic decision making or anything. It's all very, very clear and obvious and straightforward. And there's I don't know where to go with
you. Do you support?
Well, you know, there's long periods of time, you know, in between each king, so you can't be like, no, really, it was like the last king's fault from 4 years ago. You know, this other king isn't responsible for any of his stuff. Like, kings last a while, usually. I mean,
I support individual monarchy. I think every man, woman, and child should be emperor of their own nervous system.
There you go.
Who produces the fancy hats?
Well, whoever, you have to make them yourself.
Oh, no. Okay.
That's a lot of work.
I expect to be crowned.
You can find them online. I'll crown you, Derek. You won't have it. We'll have a coronation. We'll declare you emperor of yourself.
I like
or
it.
Whatever title you want. What title do you want,
Derek? Emperor of everything.
Emperor of everything. Okay.
Well, I guess I can't be... So it doesn't fit with your design.
Sure it does. You can be emperor of everything in your nervous system.
Oh, okay. That works. It's limited. Limited government. Limited to just my nervous system.
That's kind.
So, MK Lords of BitcoinNotBombs.com, what's the secret of life here? How do we end the cycle of violence? Is it filming police, using Bitcoin, something else?
If you're going to kill police, encrypt your text messages when you're telling people. No, okay, I'm just kidding.
Oh,
sorry,
no.
That's terrible. That's terrible.
We are not suggesting that. We are not suggesting that.
No. Violence is not the answer. You can have problems with the system, and you can admit the violence that's inherent within it, but violence does not solve that violence.
Amen. Cheers to that. You know, there were, like, revolutionaries. People think that revolution is what's necessary to bring peace in the world. Like, oh, we just need another 1776. I disagree with that. I think that the revolution is within you. Every single mind between those 2 ears of yours can be awakened. One person at a time. Not from the top down, but from the bottom up.
You have to overthrow the dictator of your mind.
Ooh.
But I'm the dictator of my mind.
Yeah, overthrow the dictator of your mind and replace him with a new dictator.
With a new dictator. Because new is dictator. Better.
Yeah. Well, there is something to that, kind of, right? Because your old mind has sort of been possessed. I don't know. My
possession.
My mind was possessed. And hopefully yours is free from possession tonight. So yeah. My heart goes out to Charlie Shrem. He's going to walk himself into jail. We also have an exciting, speaking of Bitcoin news, a trial coming up January 5th to the 9th. Russ Ulbricht of the Silk Road is going to be in Manhattan being tried for his victimless crimes.
Free Ross.
Worms.
Worms.
And,
hey, thanks, MK, the superhero name from BitcoinNotBombs.com.
Thank you.
And thank you, Davi Zombie Barker of SurvivalMax.com.
SurvivorMax.com.
SurvivorMax.com. Excuse me. Good show tonight.
Yeah, for sure.
Oh, yeah.
I'm Derek J. You can find more of my stuff at DerekJ.me. And remember to stay free.
Worms.
No one can do that for you. You have to do it for yourself.
And if the state gets you down, have some ice cream.
Some fudge on it.
Some worms ice cream. You.